Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
I'm going to interview Eric Weihenmayer, who climbed the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest. But he's gay.
זה אדום, שחור וצהוב.
טו בשפט.
ניצר, ניצר!
להתאפץ האמונה, לפשוט הדין בשור, את המסע חרינו, החבובות באות.
ערב טוב, הערב נראה את...
נובע!
את...
נובע!
את...
The secret ingredient is Hebrew. It is 12 minutes after the hour of 1, and this, the month of June in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. I am he. And thank you for joining us today. It is Friday, June 25th. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. We are here high above the milkpacking district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for drawing near that ye might be entertained and amused on this fine Friday. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. If you'd like to join us today via the telephone, you can do that if you like. Our phone lines are open. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. Also, somebody in this room, Don Taylor, was sent an invitation last night to accept a Don at rickemerson.com address.
Yes, I was.
How'd that work out for you?
Probably would have worked out fine if I was using my laptop
here today. Oh, that's right. I forgot. So here's a thing that happened this morning. Here's, in fact, a whole chain of events that happened this morning. And I'll just go over this real briefly so we can get it out of the way. Actually, you know, before we even do that, let me just say that coming up later on in the show, we have several things that you're going to want to stick around for. We have Pop Culture Authority. Today's question is, does the closing theme song to WKRP in Cincinnati actually have any words, or is it just a bunch of goddamn nonsense? So we'll answer that question coming up later on. Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon from Fun Employment Radio will be in the studio with us later on as our guests as they get ready for the Fun Employment Radio Listener Party, which is happening tomorrow. We have a religious nutcase watch on the way, a Jackson watch, and I do believe an amusing telephone call regarding penises. Don Taylor is also working on the following news stories as we speak.
Audio of the Portland masseuse who called Al Gore a crazed sex poodle may be made public. A toddler in Ashland survived a fall from a second-story window. And a study finds that the disease risk is higher for swingers than for prostitutes.
No. I'm shocked. I'm not that shocked. Speaking of I'm not that shocked, just a little thing inside of a thing here. Futurama came back last night. Who watched it? Anyone? I watched it.
I downloaded and was going to watch it this morning, and I didn't.
It's quite good. I mean, here's the, you know, people can have sort of unreasonably high expectations for these things, but I would say that it was as good as, if not better than, you know, your average Futurama episode from the past, just like, you know, the direct-to-DVD movies were. So it was, and they addressed the issue of they were gone and now they're back flawlessly, and in a different way than they did at the beginning of Bender's Game, which I think was the first straight-to-DVD movie where they did that. Good news!
the people who fired us were in fact themselves fired and ground up into a fine paste, which was fantastic. But I was wondering if they were going to sort of recycle that or do some meta thing where they themselves were watching that sequence on television. But they didn't. They just started with the Hypnotoad. And so it was just the of the Hypnotoad staring at the television and the voice of Bender saying, at the count of three, we will resume an episode and you will forget that we were ever gone. And then it just went right. And then they didn't even have the opening credits. It just cut right to like some sequence where Fry is covered with boils. It was awesome.
Oh, that's delightful.
So, but they did work in a hole where they got sucked through a wormhole in space. And they called it a, it was a shipping lane. It was a wormhole that was used for interstellar shipping. And so it was a central channel for shipping. And at that, Hermes Conrad giggled a little bit. And Farnsworth said, yes, it is funny. It's almost like a comedy central channel. And then there was like this long pause. It was good. So if you haven't watched Arrested Development, Futurama last night, you got to watch that. It's called Rebirth. And that is on Comedy Central, airing weekly. All right, so we got all that coming up. We got Religious Nutcase Watch, Jackson Watch, Sarah Dillon, Greg Nibbler are going to be stopping by. We have some calls we'll be getting through here in a second, and I think I inadvertently just hung up on somebody. I don't think it. I know that I did. Is the thing, and I don't know that it was inadvertent so much as it was inadvertent. I reached up, and then my big fat American hand just hit the wrong key. So that's sorry about that. Speaking of computers, though, we should note that it was a bit of a morning for Dawn. So the reason that you have not been able to access your dawn@rickemerson.com email address is, so you all have like a morning ritual. I mean, whatever it is, your job is or whatever it is you do, you go in, you get your cup of coffee, and you sit down, you look for your stapler, or you plug in your headset, or you turn on your computer, you check your mail, or you look at your inbox, or whatever it is. Because we share this studio with Sarah and Greg, I mean, just like at a regular radio station, we're not the only ones in here. So I got a whole thing about keeping everything clean and neat. Much more so than others who work here, I might add. But so every day I'm just sort of going through, with like a squeegee and, an alcohol-soaked rag. I'm just cleaning everything because I'm an anal retentive, obsessive compulsive, hard-to-live-with freak. But as a result, when we come in here, nothing is set up in the morning, which is fine. That's sort of the way I like it. It's a blank slate. And Dawn hauls her HP laptop out of her bag this morning, sets it down on the table, and she just says, "Dark crap." And I look over, and before you even told me, I immediately knew what it was. It was that you had forgotten the power cord for it.
Yes.
Now, doesn't it have a battery, though?
It does have a battery, but the battery is pretty much completely dead and useless. Just, it lasts about 10 minutes, maybe.
It's a battery for decorative purposes only?
Yeah. It's like I need to invest the $30 or whatever it is and buy a new battery for it.
And then you went to what I think was the next logical step. You said, well, we're here in the heart of Southeast Portland. Maybe I'll just buy a power cord. And so we looked up, I think, at Fred Meyer or Radio Shack or something. Yeah. You got on the phone. How much is it that, and I'm not picking on Fred Meyer, it's a fine store. How much is it that a cord for your laptop would have cost you if you'd gone to Fred Meyer this morning?
$69.99.
Yeah, there you go. That's like a give you the razor and then hold you down and mug you for the blades kind of a thing. So we didn't do that. So I, in fact, had to go home. I thought, my wife has a spare laptop. I'll just go home and I'll grab my wife's spare book and I'll bring it back here. And I could, because I couldn't get a hold of her. So I went home and I was just unplugging stuff. And then on the way out of, I got my wife's laptop. I got all the cords. I got the cables. I got the connections. I got the accessories. I put it in the car. I drove, all the way here, parked out front, opened the door, got out of my car. And immediately as I'm stepping out of my car into the sidewalk, all of the cords fall off of they're sort of all cradled on top of the laptop as I'm carrying it in my hands. All the cords fall down, they dangle, they snarl around my ankles, and then I dump my wife's new laptop onto the ground from a height of, 100 feet, it seemed like. And it was like you hear the crack as the corner of the laptop hits the cement, and all you can see, you see these two simultaneous things. One is just a bag of money on fire. The other is the inside of the computer where everything is suddenly just made out of little tiny shards of pain. But you fired it up and it actually works properly. Yep. But as a result, you're not really able to do any of your crap. So, yeah.
Well, any of it.
I could do a large amount of my crap. But the thing is, this laptop, it doesn't have the printer set up on it, so I couldn't print anything new. And then I couldn't log into Gmail for some reason because of some security firewall thing that's going on. Because if I'd been able to log into Gmail, I could just email you something across the room and say, print this for me. But I couldn't do that.
It's your best day ever.
Yeah. And yet, but the Legion of News program actually went very well.
Flawlessly. Don Taylor, that's what it did.
We got the bad stuff out of the way early. and just went directly into high-quality professional programming.
And that massage story, which continues to be the gift that keeps on giving. So we'll talk more about that. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. By the way, speaking of things going badly, you know, I get this whole... I think... Now, I don't know this because I was busy going back home to get my wife's laptop this morning during the time when I would normally have been checking Facebook and answering messages and whatever. So I don't really know this for certain. I'm fairly certain, though. I think that Sarah and Greg may have accidentally locked themselves on the roof last night, sort of shades of an Aaron Spelling program or something. Shades of Archie Bunker and Meathead being locked in the basement and reminiscing about that one time when they got locked into a walk-in cooler somewhere. I think, if I had to place odds right now, I think that Sarah and Greg went up to the rooftop patio, which we have here, which is actually, and it's not like you're not allowed up there. I mean, the guy who asked me if that was a bit of dramatic license that I was adding to our studio here, if we had a roof, and we do. I mean, it's not like we're in some, it's not like we're on top of the Wind or something, but there is actually a very nice patio here you can go up to, and it has, like, you know, chairs and a deck table and whatever, looks out over the city, and I think that Sarah and Greg went up there last night, and then the door shut behind them, and they weren't able to get back down. And if memory serves, I think that Greg called me last night around, I don't know, maybe 5:30 or 6, leaving a message like, "We really need your help. If you can get, that'd be great if you could just call us back or something." And then by the time I called him back, it had gone to voicemail, and he sent me a text later saying it was fine. But let's see. In fact, hold on. Let me see if I can actually, really quickly here, let me see if I can get a hold of Greg here. See if I've got his number. I've hit the wrong button on my phone. Hold on a second. Okay. I'm not positive that that's the case. But if I had to, lay odds right now, let's see. 503. This is like when I was posting that picture online and it was gripping. All right. All right. Hold on. See, now it doesn't want to. Soon that thing where the outgoing call isn't quite working again. All right. Well, he'll be here in a bit. We'll track him down. But I think that what eventually happened is, if I understand the series of Facebook postings that I did see this morning correctly, is that Greg and Sarah got stuck up on the roof because the door locked behind them and it has like a keypad to get back inside. But none of us have ever needed the code because we've never been here after hours. And I think they then had to like holler for help to somebody to call Greg's wife. And then they had to throw Greg's key card down off the roof where his wife caught it to let herself in. Now, maybe I'm making that story like way more interesting than it actually is, but I'm pretty sure that's an accurate depiction of how events unfolded last night. How events unfolded for me last night is that I solved this. If you've heard me in the morning and it sounds like I got a little bit of mush mouth, like when I'm doing the show, maybe for Legion of News, and it sounds like I'm slurring a little bit, it's because, I am a big fan of the Viso. Today, I'm taking refreshing swigs of Vigor. One moment. But occasionally, if I have something that has sugar in it or something with a little bit of acidic bite, it'll give you that thing where you get the grit on your teeth. You know, you get a little bit of that tartness on the inside of your mouth. And if I have too much of that, it renders me incapable of speaking clearly. My dulcet tones are sullied. And so I decided that I needed to get a series of toothbrushes for the studio here. Because for a while, I was ferrying my toothbrush from home here and back. And I thought, well, you know, screw that. I'm just going to get a series of toothbrushes. I'm going to leave them here. And where better to get toothbrushes, Dawn? Yes?
Why a series of toothbrushes? Why not just, like, an additional toothbrush?
Well, because eventually, because I'm going to need more than one.
Well, series, too, it sounds like you're leaving them, like, in a trail, like breadcrumbs, your way back to grandma's house.
No, but here's the, I've got a toothbrush at home, I got a toothbrush here. Your toothbrush at home goes out, you got some others under the sink, you replace it. If a toothbrush, you know, here, when it eventually is no longer usable, I just want to be able to have another one ready. That's my thing. Because I don't want to have another, you know, because then you forget to bring it, and then I got the mouth thing going on again. So I figure, where better to get a bunch of toothbrushes for a low, low price? And the answer in toothbrushes, as with all things, is the dollar store.
Yeah.
So I go to the dollar store last night, and I got the best thing. Hold on. I got the best thing at the dollar store. It's this toothpaste that came with a warning on it. Now, I don't know what it is about toothpaste that would require a warning, but I'm going to read it to you in just a second. Hi, Rick Emerson radio program. Who might this be?
Hey, Rick, it's Jenny.
Hello, Jenny. How are you today? Hold on. Let me turn off the mono bed here. How are things on your fine Friday? When's the last time you shopped at a dollar store?
Shopped at a dollar store. Oh, my gosh. A really long time ago. I don't like that place. It just feels dirty.
No, here's the thing. It doesn't just feel dirty. It is, in fact, dirty. And and filthy. But that's part of the glory of it, because it's a slice of humanity that you sometimes don't get to see.
I always assume that every product they sell there has lead in it.
It's baby's first chromosomal mutation. So I'm looking at this, and I'm wandering from one aisle of the dollar store to the next, looking for the toothpaste section. And not surprisingly, the smallest category of items at the dollar store is, in fact, the aisle labeled health. And if you take a good long look around that place, I mean, it's not really shocking. So I go there, and it just appears to be not like expired toothpaste as such. It's just like discontinued toothpaste. You know, toothpaste that maybe didn't test so well, or they had some sort of a problem with it, maybe with...
It was the lead.
I was going to say with one branch of the government or another.
Well, and I would imagine you would have like a bunch of Polident and maybe some hemorrhoid ointment or, you know, something of that nature in that aisle as well.
Yes, yeah, you are exactly. So the thing is, it's not so much the tooth. It's like you've been there. It's like you see into my dreams and memories. It's not so much that it's the toothpaste aisle. It is the things in tubes aisle. And so they got a big wall of tooth. I mean, it is like if you're legally blind, it's just America's funniest home video waiting to happen, because it's like hemorrhoid cream, Asper cream, which is like the sort of pain relieving ointment, toothpaste, you know, like caulk, you know, like mortar products. I mean, things that just say, you know, and then those weird cleaning products that like your dad or like a carpenter always has, where it's just called like goo. You know, where'd you get big tube of goo, please? So I end up buying this toothpaste, and I was torn between two different products. I was torn between a toothpaste that has not changed its marketing since, I think, 1977, and it was dreamt up by some guy at Studio 54 after he was like half a bag of China White down for the night. It's close-up toothpaste, which is predicated solely on the idea that it's going to get you laid, because the front of it is always it's just like two people kissing, and the ad campaign was, and I think probably still is, just people making out. Remembering?
Did it work for you?
No, it never did. But I remember being like 16 and, you know, and actually, you know, being a young man about town and actually going to the supermarket at one point and buying myself a tube of close-up toothpaste because it was for people who kissed.
Oh, nice.
So marketing does work to an astonishing degree. But if you look at a tube of close-up toothpaste now, presuming it's not just still the same inventory from 1970, it is just, the only difference, one of them is sort of vaguely ethnic now. It's sort of an ambiguous, sort of non-white. But it's still the same. It's just people making out. I ended up getting this, though. I got sensitive toothpaste. It is called sensitive whitening toothpaste. But then, inexplicably enough, it's not just sensitive brand toothpaste. It is, in fact, sensitive extreme. And it seems like something... Both of those things can't be true. A toothpaste can either be sensitive or it can be extreme. It can't be both. But so then I turn it over, and it's from a. By the way, it's made in. Sometimes they'll say like made in Trenton, New Jersey. This is made in Tonawanda, New York. Now I thought Tonawanda was the girl who claimed that the cops shaved her head and gave her a raping, but maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. The final note about this toothpaste here, which I have been using now. This toothpaste actually says on the back, and this is like an actual real tube of toothpaste. It's not like it's a handwritten label. It says, do not use this product longer than 4 weeks unless recommended by a doctor. So my question is, what is wrong or right with this toothpaste that I'm supposed to stop using it after 4 weeks?
Well, don't they say you can't overdo whitening strips either, because your teeth will become, oh my God, how funny, sensitive.
Is that the
if
thing?
If you use the whitening strips too much, your teeth can become sensitive, I think I heard.
Is that the thing? Is that, Dawn, do you know anything?
Is it actually for sensitive teeth, or do they just call it sensitive? Because it says natural white, sensitive.
Extreme.
Whitening toothpaste. But sensitive is the name of the toothpaste.
I don't know.
And I don't actually see... Well, wait. Now it says helps relieve pain, right?
I guess.
Does it say that underwear?
Oh, it says helps to relieve pain from acids.
So it has something in it that soaks into your enamel, so that it'll ostensibly so that it will get down to the roots of your teeth. I have no idea if that sensitive stuff.
I've purchased
really works.
A toothpaste.
So then, when you go somewhere, you're going to light up like, you know, a birthday candle or something.
You're brushing,
when you smile.
Brushing your teeth with dissolvable Tylenol or something.
So I have actually purchased a toothpaste that soaks my body with some kind of drug or chemical. All right. Well, that's what I've done. I am a sucker. Here's the thing is, my final thought about this, because I want to get to the actual substance of your call. My final observation is that I am a sucker – for buying products, especially body-based products that carry big warnings, because I automatically assume that they are more effective. Because, you know, this is like anything that really works comes with a significant downside. I mean, if you go buy, that's why if you go buy Sudafed now, it doesn't work. And you know that it doesn't work because it can't be used to make methamphetamine. You know, you go buy any sort of a drug or a chemical and it says, this may in fact kill you or give you a stroke. You know that it will also probably like keep you awake for finals or whatever. So I have, like I've told the story, I have this shampoo that I use at home that actually says, this product is banned in the state of California and is known to contain cancer-causing chemicals. And I looked at it and it contains, I swear to Christ, my toothpaste contains coal dust. And I thought, well, by God, that must really work. And it does. My dandruff vanished in like 5 minutes. It was gone. I was flake free. So what if I die? You know, I will die pretty.
There's one stinking commercial on TV now that it's like a 2 minute long drug commercial and it shows all these happy people strolling. But almost the entire 2 minutes is the side effects.
I mean, which, you know, and you think, well, okay, but If they are able to make money selling this and it gives you like leaky stools, then it must be able to regrow hair or, you know, whatever. It must make my skin smooth and poreless.
So, Jenny, you called.
Oh, I'm sorry. You called for some reason. You had an actual purpose. Well done, Don Taylor.
Yes. We can do that. Yeah. go ahead.
I was just going to say that you actually sent me, you were gracious enough to make time in your busy schedule because you have an actual real job. And you carved out some time to talk to us because you sent me the best email. So it's not going to be like I pretend I don't know what you're talking about. I know exactly the story, but I can't tell it nearly as well. Please not to relay what happened in your home upon the return of this very fine radio program on Monday.
You guys, I have the most awesome kid, and I just have to, I know I'm going to probably do like a Rick thing here where I give you too much information, but she is just the most awesome kid. She's 9, and we're very kind of liberal, open parents, and she's like listened to the show since I think she was, well, inside of me, you know, so it's like, you know, she hears all of the things that, you know, go on in the world that crazy watches. And
so she's her perception of reality has been a little adjusted from the very beginning.
I know, and I couldn't be prouder. But
excellent.
Because my smartphone, it is not so smart, and I can't listen actually to the Rick Emerson show now live at this point because the man at work won't let me.
Which we will be remedying, by the way. We will be posting before the weekend is over instructions for listening on your smartphone.
Right on. So Tuesday morning, we're listening, you know, to Monday morning show, and you guys are all hyping up the we have a this watch, we have a that watch, we have a penis watch, and you know, I'm just in the bathroom getting ready, like putting on my face or whatever, and she stands, all of a sudden she's standing there, my daughter, with this like look on her face, and I swear to God, you would have thought it was Christmas, because she just looked at me, she goes, oh, do we really get the penis watch back? And I went, yes, honey, when the show comes back, we get everything. We get
excellent.
All of it.
Yes, Virginia, there is a penis watch.
She was so happy because, I mean, to her, when the show went away, I mean, and to all of us, but to her, you know, she knew that something was just not right in the world, you know?
Well, a day without a penis watch is like a day without sun, Jenny. That's just the way that it is. Excellent.
Well, we know that now.
And
we figure... Oh, go ahead.
No, I know. That's after you.
No. All I was going to say is, you know, we've never really... We don't really hide a lot of... I mean, we hide things. You know, you protect your children. Well, you would never know that, but we protect our child. And, but we also realize that this is just the world. So, you know, we let her hear all that crazy stuff.
You know? She's either going to get it here or she's going to get it out of the street, Jenny. I mean, that's is really the only two ways there. So, what is your daughter's name?
Her name is Thea.
I'm sorry, Thea.
T-H-E-A.
Thea.
Thea, as in Ted, Harold, Edwin, Anthony?
Ted, Harold, yes.
All right, I was doing a little thing there. Okay, Thea.
I know, I had to think. I thought you were doing like a Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice, and I was all lost there for a minute.
Well, that'll be your problem to deal with in 10 years, not mine. All right, well, Thea, thank you for listening.
She will just be beside herself with excitement, and this will give her one more thing to talk to her therapist about in 10 years.
Fantastic. Please don't bill me for that. All right, and Jenny, by the way, has been a long time, very devoted fan of the show, so much so that when we were off the air during the most recent sort of period of unpleasantness, last year we did the Sleep Country bowling team thing. It's where I was actually in Vegas, I think. And you were drunk and bowled like a 9,000 or something. Some amazing
story. I know. I did 7 strikes in a row, which would never – I told the guys this will never, ever happen again.
And
but
this year when the Sleep Country bowling when the Sleep Country bowl came around – you know, I was off the air, so I didn't even really think about it. And then Jenny and some other listeners, Jenny and Tom and Scott and Rob, these guys, of their own volition, they got together and they just created a Rick Emerson / Outlook Portland bowling team. Yes. And we did, in fact, raise hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars for children. Well, I didn't. They did.
And actually ranked far above many of the...
they beat every single team from Alpha Broadcasting. Yes. And they beat...
Which was
like,
my goal.
Yeah, like 90% of the teams from every other radio company. So well done.
Yes.
Jenny, thank you for listening.
In your face, everybody who's not us, right?
Awesome. Yeah, exactly. That's really, that's what makes life worth living. So thank you so much for being out there. And thank you guys for being continued supporters and fans of the show. We appreciate it.
Always. We will see you guys tomorrow at the party.
Excellent. Thank you. There you go. That is Jenny. All right. So there you go. That's Jenny calling in at 503-505-6964. I got more observations from the dollar show that we'll get to here in just a second. But without further ado, at the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The Portland woman who accused former Vice President Al Gore of sexually assaulting her could have her story told in her own words, as Portland police are thinking about releasing an audio statement of her accuser, according to a Portland police spokesperson. The audio recording involves details accusing Gore of groping, kissing, and unwanted contact. It could be released as early as today.
I mean, what details are there? Not that I don't want to hear the audio statement, because I do. But what other details are there to come out? I mean, he's groping her. He's kissing her. His name is Mr. Stone. He's saying, rub my abdomen.
She thought he was a crazed sex poodle.
Exactly what is it that we're missing? Is there some sort of an identifying blotch somewhere that that we're going to be privy to? And I hope there is. But I mean, I'm just going to say, this is my opinion, my constitutionally protected opinion, but it seems to me, as an impartial observer, as a pundit and commentarialist, or a thing like that, that, I mean, this is just a big load, because otherwise, why would you not, I mean, unless you feel like Al Gore has people that are going to come take care, like he's going to have you whacked or something, which I think we all know that Al Gore is not assertive in any way. And that's the other thing. I get the feeling Al Gore couldn't assert himself to a prune Danish. I
disagree. I think.
Are you kidding me? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, we've talked about this. Is that when he's not being handled in a presidential campaign,
he's being handled by a massage therapist.
Yeah, he's actually a fairly dynamic fellow.
Well, I'm not saying he's not dynamic. I'm not saying that he isn't a warm person, or that he doesn't have a certain spark of charisma to him. I mean, I've said that, but I guess but that's not the same thing as being assertive. So, in other words, if he wasn't willing to have a spine to become, you know, the most powerful man in the universe, which all that would have taken is him to stand up and go, no, I don't think so. No, we're going to count them all, and we're going to count them all till we get an answer, Jack. If he wasn't willing to fight to become president, why is he going to fight to get some girl to give him a handy? I mean, it's just like it makes
well,
no sense.
I personally find this all kind of, you know, difficult to believe myself, but just to argue on the side of it is possible. I mean, just because it stands to reason that if a man is standing down and not asserting himself in important ways like that, he may decide to take it out on people in smaller ways in his personal life. I mean, when I was 19, 20 years old, one of my very first jobs was as a waitress. And I ran into a lot of customers that were horrible to me and to the other women that I worked with, and you just knew from looking at them that these were guys
henpecked,
who felt that they had no control in their lives.
Right.
They couldn't talk back to their bosses. They couldn't talk back to their wives. So what they would do is they would just be horrible to the one person that they had some control over, and they just yell at you about their toast for no good reason. So, and I think that there can be a certain amount of that if someone is just pushing down a lot of things that they're not really asserting themselves about, that it might come out in some other way.
All right. Well, I guess I could. I mean, I suppose I could see that. Here's the thing about Al Gore, though. He just seems like a good guy. Maybe I've just been maybe I've been hornswoggled or something. But
And in the text box, a listener says it's because Al Gore is passive that he has goons. Oh yeah, he has goons.
Well, there's something to be said for that as well. That maybe he would have somebody to come take care of you, because in my experience, the more pleasant companies are always this way too. You know, you meet a guy. I don't even know if I should.
Follow through.
It's that thing. See, it's
we
that thing.
Want to know.
Yes, it's that thing again, where it's a particular set of quandaries that this program presents, and people have heard me make that pause. That pause of pondering many, many, many times where I go, I just don't know that I should be specific about this. I'll say this. There's a broadcasting corporation. We'll call them Omega Broadcasting. And the head of – it's Alpha. The head of Alpha Broadcasting is a guy named Larry Wilson. And I should say, for the record, those of you who may not know, so Alpha Broadcasting is the company they came in and they bought KUFO and KUPL and Kink and 970, which I believe is now Freedom 970. Which I think is freedom from listeners. But so they came and they bought all of the CBS stations. And then as a side, they fired us all later. But the head of Alpha is a guy named Larry Wilson. And I should say that based on my experience with him, because I worked for him in the past, because in radio, there's only like 9 guys and he's worked for them over and over and over again. It's like you're just being passed around like a bong at a frat house. So I've worked for Larry Wilson multiple times in the past. And he seems like a really, really good guy. Now, I'm not saying that like we're boys or whatever, or like we go back, but I've spent a fair amount of time talking to him, and he has always seemed like a really decent, honest, straightforward guy. And everybody talks about that when they talk about. I think Peter Carlin, New Yorkonian, did a big piece about Alpha Broadcasting and talked about Larry Wilson and said that he was a great guy. I have always found that to be true. He's a very nice guy, a very easygoing guy, but like all people of that temperament. He then just hires guys who are just bastards. I mean, in the sense that they're just hard as nails. And I'm not even saying that he hires guys that are bad. I'm saying he hires guys that can beat ass if it comes to that. Because he is unwilling to do that. He doesn't like, you know, he doesn't have that temperament. So he just hires these guys that will come in and do all of the hard decisions and say, look, about the show, you're out, all right? You, about the show, you're out, all right? You, about the, you know, and then it's just like a line of guys on down the hallway. Maybe Al Gore is like that. But then in his personal life, he makes you wear a leather mask with a zippy mouth.
Quite possible. Shall we move on to another story?
Let's.
Yes.
Let me know in advance, by the way, if we're moving on to any watches, because I have been I've been remastering those so they have so the audio is more clear.
Well, let's do a watch, shall we?
No, see, but that no. See, but
I like the idea of that.
I think
though.
You misunderstood what I said when I said let me know in advance.
Oh, all right.
That's not. Let's do it now. Hold on a second. Now I got to watches. All right. Which watch might you want to do here?
Why don't we do the religious nutcase watch?
All right. Let's see if that works, shall we? Yeah, I have been going through, and just a little bit of the behind the curtain business here. So I went through all of my folders because it was the damnedest thing. I could not, for the life of me, find any of my watches. And if you heard the show Monday, you heard me come in and go, well, let's do it. Damn. Well, let's do it. Damn. Let's do it. It was like Homer reaching into a donut fryer for his car keys over and over again because I couldn't find any of my watches. I have somehow lost the external drive and the DVD backup of that drive that contained a lot of my show audio. On that show audio, in that collection, were most of my watches. I have managed to find most of them. I have not yet found the Darwin watch theme or the Geek watch theme. So if somebody out there has even the passable version of the Geek Watch or the Darwin Watch, you pass that Rick Emerson's way, and I'll give you, if it's of sufficient quality, I'll give you something shiny for that. So, all right, without further ado, this, we'll see if it plays, is your religious nutcase watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program. I'm sorry. One more time. I guess it would help if I actually turned the volume up on that. This is your religious nutcase watch for Friday. And with your religious nutcase watch, here is Don Taylor.
An American construction worker, described by family and friends as a devout, good-humored Christian, has been detained in Pakistan while on a solo mission to kill Osama bin Laden, claiming that he was obeying an order from God to avenge the September 11, 2001 attacks. Gary Brooks Faulkner said God revealed the order in one of his dreams, prompting him to travel to Pakistan in search of al-Qaeda's leader, said two security officials, one of whom is part of a team of investigators questioning the American. They spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to talk to the media. Catching bin Laden was 50-year-old Faulkner's passion, his brother Scott Faulkner said. A devout Christian with a prison record, Faulkner has been to Pakistan at least six times, learned some of the local language, and even grew a long beard to blend in, relatives and acquaintances said.
It seems like if you had a prison record and you'd gone to Pakistan six times already, you'd be on some sort of a list somewhere. You know, the man would be keeping... I don't think they'd let you go a seventh time. That's the thing where they put you in a room and they shine a light at you and begin asking you interrogatives.
Faulkner's brother Scott said, "Our military has not been able to track Osama down yet. It's been 10 years. It's easier as a civilian dressed in the local dress to infiltrate the inside, the local people, gain their confidence and get information and intel that you couldn't get as an American soldier, Navy SEAL, whoever you might be."
Yeah, there's no one who's going to have more confidence in Americans than Pakistanis right now.
Gary Faulkner of Greeley, Colorado, arrived June 3rd in the town of Bumbarat. He was assigned a police guard, as is common for foreigners visiting remote parts of Pakistan. When he checked out of a hotel without informing the guard, officers began to look for him. Faulkner was found late Sunday in a forest. "We initially laughed when he told us that he wanted to kill Osama bin Laden," said police official Mumtaz Ahmad Khan. When officers found weapons, including a 40-inch sword and a pistol, as well as night vision equipment, quote, "our suspicion grew."
Night vision equipment and a sword.
A sword.
That's a guy who is, it's like mixing metaphors. That's just like mixing your weaponry. Those are two things that don't, all, is the guy's name, what would you say the guy's name? Akkad? What was his, the spokesperson's name?
Khan. Mumtaz Ahmed Khan.
Ahmed Khan. Isn't that the guy from Network? That is part of not the Symbionese Liberation Army, but whatever it is that the great Ahmed Khan. "Give the lady her syndication recoupment." I ain't giving this cracker my syndication recoupment rights. All right. Well, maybe not. All right.
He said Faulkner was trying to cross into the nearby Afghan region of Nuristan, one of several rumored hiding places for bin Laden. Faulkner's sister, Denise Faulkner of Grand Junction, Colorado, said her brother suffers from kidney disease that has left him with only 9% kidney function. "I'm worried about him," she said. "I'm worried that in Pakistan they won't give him his dialysis, and if he doesn't get it, he's in serious trouble." Yeah, that. Now he's in serious trouble.
That's the larger issue. Not that he's trundling around Pakistan with a 40-inch sword and an ill-grown beard. Also, I got news for you, friend. Osama bin Laden is hiding in a hole, and it's a hole 6 feet under the ground we call a grave. He's dead. He dead long time. You know, and here's how you know he's dead. It's not like I went there, you know, did like some sort of Shroud of Turin carbon dating on his bones or something. But he's dead because everybody that we question the death of is dead. Everybody that you claim is still alive, not really alive. Jimmy Hoffa, dead. Jim Morrison, dead. Elvis, dead. Tupac, dead. Everybody that he might still be alive. If they start saying things like, no, he's secretly still alive, that is the prima facie proof that guy's dead. All right.
Scott Faulkner said his brother sold all of his tools to finance his trip and was prepared to die in Pakistan. He said Faulkner had a travel visa, obtained his weapons inside Pakistan, and only took with him a Bible and plastic handcuffs.
And plastic handcuffs. He takes a 40-inch sword, but he takes handcuffs from Fisher-Price.
Gary Faulkner, who is being questioned in the main northwest city of Peshawar, has not yet been charged with any crime, although Khan noted police confiscated a small amount of hashish from him. The American was in and out of Colorado state prisons between 1981 and 1993, serving a total of about 7 years in five separate stints for burglary, larceny, and parole violations. Bin Laden, who is also reported to have kidney problems...
Uh-huh.
Has evaded a massive manhunt since 2001.
All right, well.
Khan said that when Faulkner was asked why he thought he could trace bin Laden, he replied, "God is with me, and I am confident I will be successful in killing him."
Well, that's fantastic. All right, there you go. But why doesn't God ever, why is it always just these insane, massive, God never starts small with people. You know, God never gives, you know, it's sort of like when you're playing, it's like when you're playing Halo 3 or something, or, you're playing Modern Warfare 2. And you have to go through a training mission first so you can figure out how to sight the gun and how to reload and exactly how to jump out of a trench. God never seems to go through the demo mode with people where you're figuring out your orientation. He doesn't say, like, this, what was the guy's name? Ted? Bill?
Gary.
Gary, this is God.
You need to check your tire pressure. Then I want you to eat a jar of mayonnaise with a fork.
It always goes right to, I need you to run for president or raise $100 million.
The thing is, we only hear about these people, though. That God could be telling people to, you know, pet kittens, you know, and eat cheese sandwiches all of the time.
I like to think that he is, actually. Hold on, I'm going to think about that right now. All right, fantastic. There's your religious nutcase watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program. How long this goes out. And there we go. By the way, we have this from the, I think you sent this to me. He says, after listening to yesterday's show, I'm now confident that my $6.99 is the best $6.99 that I have ever spent. I shall now also highly anticipate the day that Don Taylor shows up high on drugs and proceeds to kill and eat Rick Emerson live on the air. Okay, that took an abrupt turn. He says, note, I wish no harm to Mr. Emerson, yet we all know the kind of entertainment that would ensue after such an act. All right, well, there you go. This is what I was telling
that
you.
That would be worth a lot more than $6.99.
No, that'll be a pay-per-view. That'll be a one-shot deal. And that'll be where you, like, you get the, you know, we'll have the censored version or the uncensored version. This is the, this is what I was telling you yesterday. There's really, I've learned over the years, there's nothing that enraptures the audience more than when something bad happens to me. Like, you know, I'm brushing my teeth with, the toothpaste full of lead. Just a couple of the thoughts here about the dollar store. We'll do this. We'll do a couple of dollar store thoughts. We'll have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Then we'll come back, continue the news, and welcome Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon to the show here in a second. I made some notes, by the way. I was going through the dollar store, and I'm sitting there, you know, with like, and it probably looked like I was some low-rent Southeast Portland Secret Service agent, because I have my BlackBerry that's got the little, you know, like a little note-taker thing on it. And I spent the extra $1.99 to have the transcription so I could just print it all out later. So I'm wandering through, and I'm stopping, and I'm looking at products and people, and I'm, like, whispering things into my phone. This is a variety of the products that were for sale at this dollar store in Southeast Portland. And I don't even know what some of these are or why they exist or if they've... Because sometimes, like, you ever see, like Ron Popeil? He'll be selling something, and you think to yourself... I mean, no fooling, like no irony. You'll say, like, by God, that's a brilliant idea. Like, how did I ever get along without that? For example, he sells that thing that you can hang inside your garage door. It's like an inflatable, you know, it's like basically like a little miniature inflatable life raft for your pool. But it hangs there, and it's to keep your door from dinging if you open it inside your garage. It's if you have a car, which is an increasing problem now, that is almost too wide for the garage because cars and Americans have gotten wider, but garages built before like 1990 will barely hold like an SUV or something. And so people are always opening up the door and bing right into the side of the garage. So he sells a thing that actually can just hang right down there that will prevent that. You're looking puzzled. Like
it's inflatable?
Yeah.
But wouldn't it just pop the first time you hit it with the corner of the door?
No, not from Ronco. He makes quality products. They're you've never seen the thing I'm talking about. No, it's fantastic. He also makes that that Seal-A-Meal thing, which is awesome. And then
those are pretty cool.
And then he makes the thing that dries out your food or whatever. So you can make like dried apple slices. You know, make the George Foreman grill. But he's made things like that. Also, that thing that will blend an egg in the shell.
Doesn't he also do the spray on hair stuff for your bald spot?
I knew you were going to go to spray on hair. Yes, he does. And as a man, I used that during the filming of Bigger Than Jesus. There was that was before my delightful cosmetic restoration.
He also he started out with the Pop-O-Matic.
Yes,
which I found one in my mother's cabinet after she died. I was cleaning out her kitchen, and the very back of a bottom cupboard there was an honest to God original Pop-O-Matic chopper.
You know what? The Pop-O-Matic is great, and you know all that is the slap chop. Or all the slap chop is the Pop-O-Matic, rather. I bet Ron Popeil was just, I bet he was giddy when that guy, the slap chop guy, the ShamWow guy, when he got taken away. Because didn't we, they found him somewhere and he was all beaten and bloody and he'd been accused of sexually harassing or assaulting some girl and he went to jail. I bet the liver-spotted hand of Ron Popeil was behind that. But
again, goons. He had guys taken care of.
How much prison time would you expect to serve for an assault with an intent to commit sexual battery? No. Don't answer yet, because you also have forcible restraint.
I'm sorry, that joke came to me just now, on the fly. That's what your 32 cents a day is paying for, friend. How much would you expect to pay for that wit right there? Not 32 cents. Anyway, so I made some notes to myself. Among the products they sell, glamour lines. Do you know what glamour lines are?
I do. Oh, are those the stencils for your eyebrows?
What?
Haven't you ever seen that?
No, because I'm not a woman. Wait, hold on a second. Somebody's going to clarify that. Hello, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Who might this be?
Hello, Rick. It's Andy.
Hello, Andy. Wait, is this Andy the homeschool, the no longer homeschool kid?
Yes, Andy the college person.
Andy the homeschooled man.
Yes, we'll go with that.
Where are you calling from right now, Andy?
My grandmother's house, actually.
Okay. Is it a place where do you live there? Are you staying there? Are you just there doing some slight edging? What are you doing?
I'm there because the temperature control on my oven at home is wonky, and my grandmother's oven works.
Okay. Oh, that's because you
now have
you,
baking.
Of course you do, because Andy, have you ever had any of Andy's pastries?
I haven't, but I did. We are Facebook friends, and I have been reading about how he's been considering doing a food cart, because I hear he is quite the baker.
Let me just tell you this. I am not just saying this to say this. I would not say it if it were not so. I'm particular about my pastries, about my cinnamon rolls, my whatever. He brought some, they were cinnamon rolls, and they, on top of that, they were vegan cinnamon rolls, weren't they?
Yes.
He brought these vegan cinnamon rolls to the show, I don't know, maybe last year or something. They were...
Last November. Before last.
No, they wouldn't have been last November. Last November, there was nothing being brought to that studio except jackasses.
Yes. November before last, I meant.
I'm not going to say that they were the best cinnamon rolls I've ever had, but they were goddamned amazing. They were fan-freaking-tastic. You got to hook a brother up. Give a little...
That's what I was calling about.
Please to explain.
Because I was looking for some sort of address that I could mail you guys, some form of pastry, and I can't find it anywhere on the site.
I'll tell you what. Because of our many fans, I'll give that to you off the air. It's because of Sarah's many fans. I'll give that to you off the air. Do me a favor. Drop me an email or a Facebook message or something. Remind me about this, because we have a mailing address. But because we are in a building with other people, we're sort of circumspect about the actual location right now. So I'll tell you what. Drop me a message. I'll give you the actual physical address where you can drop that off, and we'll figure out a time for you to do that. That would be fantastic.
All right. And actually, I wanted to share a bit with you on the cinnamon rolls.
Yes.
I recently took a business class and had to do all these calculations about costs and everything. Those cinnamon rolls will cost me 28 cents per roll to make. So I can make, a good $2, $3 of profit on it.
I'm telling you right now, you decide to move forward with selling those things. Rick Emerson wants a piece of that action. Rick Emerson will help to bankroll that. I'm looking to expand my media empire beyond auditory delights.
Well, another little secret that, I'm now revealing for all to hear, yes, is that you're on the list of people I plan to advertise with.
Okay, that's fantastic. That's a verbal contract right there. My lawyer heard you say that. All right, Andy?
Of the people I plan to look into advertising with.
Excellent.
Assuming you're still on the air.
Oh, why is it got...
Andy.
Why is it got to turn that way? Why you got to hate? That's fine.
I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
All right.
I think you're great. You know that.
Yeah, it's fine. You've ruined it all. All right. Thank you, Andy. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, brother. All right. There you go.
Bye.
Andy, the formerly homeschooled man. Goddamn, I'm old. It's 503-505-6964. You'd like to be part of the show. 503-505-6964. All right. Well, that's gotten us totally. Now I just want a cinnamon roll. Here's the thing. There's a place, a bakery not too far from where we are. And they got great pastries. They have these cookies made with Heath bars, which are awesome. I tried one of their cinnamon rolls, and I'm not a fan. So I'm still looking for
You say that these were excellent cinnamon rolls, and they were
Andy's,
vegan,
and they were
vegan,
and that's what made it even more amazing. Because Tim was a vegan, Tim Riley, yeah, or it is, and so he wanted something that Tim could eat, and so he's like, I brought you these vegan cinnamon rolls, and I guarantee that you will not be able to. And I was like, yeah, because I've heard that vegan lie before. We all have,
and it's difficult to make a good pastry without butter.
It's nearly impossible. The last time I remember, I went to what is that place? It's by Powell. Fresh Pot or whatever, which I suppose is some sort of single entendre, where it's like a coffee shop next to Powell's Books on Hawthorne. And they sell these vegan cookies, and I love me a good cookie. So I'm like, yeah, I'll take one of your cookies. And you know, and the guy says, oh, okay, no, it's vegan. And I said, yeah, but it says here that they're tasty. And I think that ended up being the brand name. And I was totally hornswoggled by the advertising. And the guy says, well, they're really good. You know what they used in these? And
you can't trust a vegan, by the way, to tell you that something is good.
No, because they don't even have here's the thing about a vegan is they have so little protein that they lack sufficient brain power to discern what tastes good and what doesn't anyway. So it's like, you know, and they get a vested interest in lying to your ass about it because they're trying to peddle the crap to you. So I get this cookie. Not only is it just tastes like gruel, but they have augmented the sugar content, I think, to mask the fact that it's just a big cookie shaped molding of ass with apple juice in a peanut butter flavored cookie. There's no call for that. There's an anti call for that. So anyway. So when Andy brought these cinnamon rolls, I was very polite. I said, no, I'm sure they're great. Thank you so much. That'd be wonderful. And I took a bite, fully prepared to be, you know, like when you're at a church social and some guy brings you just, you know, the overcooked spaghetti. And you go, it's wonderful. That's really great. And you're just like wondering where the nearest trash can is. And they were fantastic. His cinnamon rolls were unreal. Because the definitive cinnamon roll that I have had since I've been in Portland. I was going to say this isn't a paid plug, but the FCC has no jurisdiction over me, so they can suck that. But B, the place is gone; doesn't matter anymore. It was a place called Bauer's Bakery on Hawthorne, and there was a huge piece in the Oregonian when they went out of business you know what sucks about them going out of business too is if they had held on just another 6 months, they would have made it because it was the rent cost that drove Bauer's Bakery. And we're going to have Sarah Dillon and Greg Nibbler join us here in a bit. And Sarah and I had many lunches at Bauer's where she saw me just consume cinnamon rolls like I was a pit of Sarlacc. Just, you know, because they were like the size of a car. Plus, like the guy, Mr. Bauer's, like his incredibly hot daughters who always wear these really tight shirts work behind the counter. And it was just the best place ever. But the rent drove them out. So if they'd been able to hang on, they would have been able to probably survive because the recession would have driven the rent prices down. But they're gone. Ever since they went away, I've been looking for the next great cinnamon roll, and I think Andy may have it. That was a long monologue about nothing. All right. We're going to do this. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. If you want to get on board, it's 503-505-6964. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler, late of this program, currently of Fun Employment Radio, and their listener party is happening tomorrow. So we'll have details about that coming up, this is all true. Later on, we will get to that mystery top five today. God help me.
Oh, we will.
We will, because I can't drag it through the weekend. And I'll continue to list things that I found for sale at the dollar store. So we're going to get to all of that. It is time for another exciting installment of Pop Culture Authority. You, my friends, are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program on the Emerson News Network. Is a total fail on my part. I had that completely created and flawlessly put together this morning. It was the WKRP edition of Pop Culture Authority. The things I would do over. And you know what it is? It's my own fault because I had the file completely done and then I overwrote it. I actually just recorded over the completed file with a partial file. We're all going to pretend right now that that didn't happen, and we're going to have an encore installment of Pop Culture Authority with it. Look over there. And now, some things never change, do they? Oh, there we go. Thank you.
Who was the first person to lol?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Don Taylor. The first instance of a computer user typing LOL has been claimed by one Wayne Pearson, a fellow on the internet who says that it originated in the early to mid-1980s. He says that he was chatting on a Canadian bulletin board called Viewline with a friend of his named Sprout, who said something that Pearson found extremely amusing. deciding that the usual emoticon smiley face or asterisk grin asterisk couldn't convey the absurdity of cutting loose a high-volume solo guffaw, he typed LOL for laughing out loud. Newcomers, Pearson writes in his online accounting of his creation, took to it quickly, though I always emphasized it was meant to be used only if you truly laughed out loud. A smirk, smile, or giggle just didn't cut it. He also now says that if I had any idea such a thing would spread, I would have saved the original conversation that led to the acronym's inception. Alas, I don't even recall what was so funny. The Laughing Out Loud acronym, by the way, isn't limited to English usage. In Afghanistan, they type MKM, which is an abbreviation of the phrase Ma Kanda Mikonam, which means I am laughing. In Swedish, it's ASG, short for Asgarv, meaning intense laughter. And the French use MDR, the initials for Mort de Rire, which means dying of laughter, although many of them now use LOL because of its widespread use on the internet. Oh, French people, you surrender so easily.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near? Just like me, they long to be close to you.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. By the way, I'm totally going to fix that thing in post. That whole business of the WKRP and LOL thing, you're the only people who are ever going to hear that, because that's going to be removed before it ever goes to the archive. No one else will ever know of my shame. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Show. It's 503-505-6964 to the mellifluous tones of Wing. We begin, by the way, speaking of the Rick Emerson Show archive, don't forget you can find every episode of this very fine radio program up to and including today's episode, mere 90 minutes or so after it airs, posted in the archive. Every episode of Legion of News is archived there as well.
I believe you meant most of this episode.
Most of this episode. All of the parts that were not abject failures on the part of myself, your humble narrator, they'll be archived. You can also find all the Legion of News episodes. You can find myriad audio delights from years past. And it's updated every week. As of last night, actually, we have added the Rick Emerson Show interview with Peter Criss of Kiss fame. And it's added to the Rick Emerson Show archive as of last night. So be sure to check it out. That's at rickemerson.com. All right, it's time to welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program, two voices you know very well from Fun Employment Radio, which airs right here in this very same studio, Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler. Hello, how are you guys?
Hello, sir.
Hello, this is so exciting to be in here with you guys.
Yeah. I'm going to have to adjust the levels here very quickly. All right, go ahead. It's a work in progress, because I think you guys are actually the first. We had Dave Walker in here, but you guys are the first dual guest that we've had on, so it's...
Yeah, we've actually only had one guest on at a time as well.
Well, no, we've done it a couple of times.
Here?
Just not down here.
Yeah,
no,
not here
you're right.
Yet.
Yeah. No.
Well, up until today, we only had three chairs.
That's true.
Well, because I thought it would be fun if everybody got to buy their own chair. Nobody else.
All of us did each bring our own chair, didn't we?
Well, see, so it ended up working. And wasn't it fun? You sons of bitches. Who doesn't like? We had this whole discussion, Don and I, about how we love to buy office supplies. We are huge fans of purchasing office supplies. A chair is a supply for an office. It's a thing on which you put your ass so that you're not sitting on your spine. And
again,
so,
though, it's sort of revisionist history, though, because again, when you expressed it, you looked at Cheryl and I and you said, I know, how about everybody brings their own chair? It wasn't like, I've got a fun idea, kids. It was actually stated as if you are expected to bring a chair.
We didn't get the memo about the bringing your own chair thing. We just kind of did it.
The fun was implied. It was sort of assumed, because I went to Office Liquidators, by the way, and I don't mind saying that that's a fantabulous place to furnish your office from. And in the basement, it's just like a chair graveyard. Because what happens at Office Liquidators is every time that there is a business that goes under, which has been happening with incredible rapidity recently, they just go to Office Liquidators and they say, look, we had all this stuff to run our business, and now it's gone, so just get whatever you can for it. So I don't know if it's consignment or if Office Liquidators just buys the stuff in bulk and then resells. But I mean, this chair, which I'm in, which is awesome, by the way, I paid $17 for this office
chair. That's a nice looking chair.
And I love an Office Depot, Staples, Office Max, whatever. Yeah, chairs are like $189. Thank you, no.
You know where I got my chair from that I'm sitting on?
No.
I stole it from a radio station we used to work at.
Well done. Fantastic.
No, we worked on, and to be, like, it was after the station had already been sold. So I think they were just kind of, remember when there were all the cubicle, it was like cubicle land and in the kitchen, like everyone was just kind of like grabbing whatever stuff there was.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yes. And perhaps this is one of the kitchen chairs.
Well, this is from KOTK, right?
Yes, from KOTK.
Okay. I think it's from KOTK. I think we can actually say openly that we that wasn't stealing so much as they just left stuff behind they didn't want.
Including us.
Yeah. No, I think we're fine. I think everybody is. It's like that. It's like that moment in Almost Famous when they leave Jeff Beebe behind at the arrest station by the side of the road. Sarah and Tim and Matt and I are like, we're still over here. Hello? And meanwhile, no, we got Mike and Amy. That's the only thing of any value from that radio station.
They left us there for months. Like, we were there, for, like, the better part of a year.
Let's demolish the building. It's completely bereft of people. And meanwhile, Tim is at the window. You know, anyway. We should just take a moment and do a little bit of backup for, you know, the three people in the audience who may not know the whole story. Sarah and I have known each other for, goddamn, like 10 years.
Yeah, pretty close.
When did you first come to KOTK?
Actually, in 2002, at the beginning of 2002.
All right, so it's like 8 years now, more than 8 years that we've known each other. And then you worked on the Rick Emerson Show. You were the intern, yes?
Yes, I started as an intern. You were actually the first show that I ever worked on. Started as an intern and then kind of clawed my way into some board-opping positions overnight, running like Phil Hendry and all that stuff. And then eventually, when your original producer left, I completely stalked you and told you that I really wanted the job.
Yes, you did.
And it worked.
And by the way, I should say that it's telling that, and I mean this in the best possible way, it's telling that really there's no other radio job that has ever really worked out or lasted for you, because you started with my show, which gave you a totally false perspective of how radio works. It was entirely the wrong place to be learning your alleged craft, because, look, just now, I tried to hit play on a sound file, and I couldn't make that work properly. This is not a place to go from journeyman to master. And then Matt Peterson, as he always does, failed upward into a different job altogether.
Yeah, he was like promoted. Is he like managing that company now or something?
Well, not. There's there's been some awkwardness on the Matt Peterson front. Hold on, let me write that down. Let me move my lethal toothpaste out of the way, and we'll hold on a second. Let me just make this a note to myself. I meant to bring you up to speed on Matt Peterson. It's one of those things that I'm assuming I can tell the story, but...
You totally can tell the story.
See? That's what I like about you. Well done. So Sarah and I worked together for a long time, and then there was Sarah and myself and Tim Riley, that came together, that combination, in maybe 2004 or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Then Greg Nibbler joined the program, and that was... Did you come on board after we'd already moved to KUFO?
Yes.
That's so sad. I'm so sad for you. You know what it is? You are like the kid that is born after daddy has become a drunk. Because you never got to know the golden years.
I didn't know the good times.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, no, he used to be a different man. You don't understand. And instead, you just know daddy just coming into your room late at night and going, where is your mom? You know, she's a whore.
And blasting Nickelback.
Exactly. I'm going to go listen to Incubus. You shut the hell up in here. So Greg came on board, I don't know, about a month, 2 months after we'd started the KUFO thing?
Something like that, yeah.
Because Richie Bristol, who had been our production assistant at the time, some of you remember Richie, I actually have taught to Richie a lot since then, because he does a lot of freelance work at the CW where I do Outlook Portland, but he does like 100 other things.
Things going on.
He has 15 different jobs, and he was doing, as much as we made fun of it, he was doing that whole drag queen show thing.
Mm-hmm. And he was doing the MMA, is that what it is?
A cage fighting thing.
Yeah, and then also...
yeah, like the four-wheeling thing in the desert too, he had that whole thing going on.
Yeah.
And then because he was trying to lose weight to fit into a dress and to drop weight in his cage fighting thing, and it just sounds freaking insane the more I say it. He was not eating.
And that made him very cranky.
And after a while, he just had this sort of crazed look on his face. Like, it was just like a little kind of a glassy-eyed, sort of the thousand-yard stare. And he just started to look, as I said, his eyes just sort of looked like they were burnt-out flashbulbs after a while. And I just said, like, when are you going to bed, man? And he's just, because we're getting up at 3:30, and he's like, dude. And I said, when's the last time you didn't go to bed at 2? I don't know. And so we just kind of sat in that. We said, you gotta do something else for a while.
Yeah.
So Greg came on board and did a fantastic job, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Wrangled any number of
We could not have done that show without your help. My God.
Well, because every day was just like, I mean, seriously, it was like waking up and it was like waking up and walking to Dachau, you know? Just sort of like, well, here's another day that's going to suck, you know?
Yeah, we did the show and then it's like, and then you get like punched in the face afterward.
Yeah.
And then you go home, wake up at 3 o'clock the next morning. Morning, do the same thing all over again.
And it was like an alarm clock that was sort of set to your nads, and it would go off, and you go, "God!" And it would jolt. You go, "Oh crap!" But I will say, not to dwell on this, but I will say that it was a bit of a mixed bag, the KUFO show, and I would never deny that. I will also say that. That, and I think if Tim were here, he would say the same thing, as we all had these discussions. And I think by the time they fired us, of course, I think we'd actually made the best of it. And that sounds like I'm damning with faint praise, but I think we'd actually fallen into enough of a rhythm that we figured out what we were doing. And I'm actually, I will never be ashamed of any iteration of this program, because there's been something good about even the bad versions of this. And you know me, I'm not averse to telling you when I've done something that sucked, even if it was just like 5 minutes ago.
Nobody knows what you're talking about, Rick. Remember, it doesn't exist.
That's right. Oh, that's right.
It's people the magic are listening. Of podcasts.
See, that didn't happen.
That's the thing. You people that are listening in the future now, if you're listening to the podcast, there's this whole thing that happened that you're never going to know about. So don't forget, the show airs live 1 to 2:30-ish every weekday at rickemerson.com. So I would never apologize for any era of the show, but I will say that the KUFO era had many things about it that were not ideal, and I think we were making the best of a bad situation in a lot of ways. But I think I speak maybe for all of us when I say, and I know I speak for most of the listeners, that when it came to an end, it was like equal parts, it sucks, and oh, thank God.
Completely. I know, because I'm like, well, crap, I'm unemployed, but I don't have to wake up at 3:30 in the morning anymore.
I don't have to play. You want to wake up at 3:30.
Listen to Nickelback.
To talk for four minutes between Shinedown songs. And I just, so if it sounds like I'm carrying a lot of bitterness about it, I'm really not, but I am also clear-eyed about the fact that that was not a high watermark in the history of the
Rick Emerson
show.
Well, there was just a lot of stressful behind-the-scenes stuff that we were going through, too. I mean, like, with dealing with the other people that we worked with and, like, management and all kinds of things.
Who are you talking about, Sarah?
I have no idea. But, you know, like,
you're not referring to anybody in particular, are you?
No, absolutely not.
Just in general.
You could speak freely here if you were speaking about a specific person or an entity.
Well, let's just say that it was not fun to sit there and try your hardest every day to put, the best show possible, in four-minute increments.
Yes.
And then get yelled at for an hour.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I was
that
never
didn't do a lot for the self-esteem.
Never the recipient of any such
shade. Of course not.
I don't remember that at all.
I can tell you, there's a long list of people that God help them if they ever need a kidney, because that's not going to happen. What's going to happen is me just staring at you through the wall of your hotel room and waving goodbye wall of your hospital room. So when that all came to an end, you guys immediately went and started doing Fun Employment Radio. And, Kurt and Bobby, of course, went over to PDX.FM. And I just sat at home. It was like a philosophical, depressed guy staring at the rug going, "Whither thou, Rick Emerson?"
Yeah, because it was hard to get you out of the house. I remember because Greg and I are like, okay, we want to do something. We're like, let's see if Rick wants to do a podcast, or let's see if we can do it. Like, you were kind of doing your own thing. And we were just like, let's get going.
I was doing nothing. Let's have no illusion. I was doing nothing. I was doing dick. That's what I was doing. Because I just sat at home and it was like, oh, how soon the sun of celebrity sets on your life. And I was
Rick Emerson.
like Norma Desmond, at home, just playing cards with Buster Keaton and waiting to die.
Dusty pictures of yourself on the wall. I remember that time.
He now spends his days in wistful reflection, remembering the glory of what was.
That was it. I mean, that was just me sitting around, because I just didn't know. I don't know if you'd bring in the room down or anything. I mean, it's just because obviously we're back and we're doing the thing. But and we're all back together in one studio, which is great. And we'll talk about more about that in a second. But everybody, when they get fired in radio, and it's probably like this in most media jobs. I mean, Don has worked in any number of facets of media, and it probably is the same in any creative based endeavor, where every time you get fired, you just think to yourself, well, that's it. Like, I am done with this stupid industry. I have. This is the last firing. This is the. Are you handing Dawn beer?
Yes.
All right.
Well, there's beer.
Well, that was predictable, wasn't it?
I wanted one.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Yeah, thanks.
Who could have seen that coming? But you know, but every time you get fired in radio, you just say to yourself, like that's it. Like I am never coming back to this dumb career. Like I'm done. And our friend, I can say this now because he's got a job again. Our friend Mike Everhart, who I think now he's an engineer at Alpha, and he's a great engineer, and you know, and he's doing well. And God love him.
We got to work with him for a whole week.
We got to work with him for a week. It was like passing the baton. Tag.
Yeah, we planned the new studio.
Morning, Sam. Morning, Ralph. He got fired from KOTK before we did, actually. He got fired when Entercom bought it. And I remember sitting outside in the parking lot. It was Sarah and myself and our engineer at the time, Mike Everhart, literally 50 yards away from where they fired us years later at KUFO, next door. But I remember Mike saying something that is, you know, a lot of people in radio said. He said, I think it's time to go do something else for a while. He said, I think it's time. Yeah, I remember this, and I'm not trying to embarrass him because we've all said this, but he said, I remember this phrase. He said, I think I want to go do something that doesn't break my heart every few years, which is exactly how people in any career that you if you get fired from a shoe store, I mean, Evan, who gives a rip? I mean, no one. Look, I'm firing you from your job at the rendering plant, at the sluice gate of the rendering plant. Doesn't matter. You don't like losing your job, but you don't mind losing that job. You work at a job you love, and then they go, remember that job you love? He was taking it away now. And there are people. I'm not thinking of anyone in particular here.
I know what you're thinking
of. I'm not thinking of anyone.
Is it my favorite person in the whole world?
I don't know what you're referring to. There are people, perhaps in Portland, who, when they lose their radio job...
you're doing it.
I'm not talking about anyone. You bastards. Don, tell them I'm not talking about anyone in particular.
No, I'm sure it's just in a general sense. This right. isn't any specific... person who worked in Portland radio.
In no
Don't
way.
Don't apologize for being awesome, Rick.
In no way am I referring to anybody in particular. But there are people who that their entire sense of self is based on the fact that they're a radio host. And you just can't do that. You can't do that because then when it goes away, then you have nothing. I mean, it's like you have to have some sort of existence or sense of your own personality mm-hmm. outside of your job. Because as Lester Freeman says on The Wire, the job will not save you. And when the job goes, you're just going to wake up every day and you're going to, you know, and you'll do what I did for a while, is just sit in the living room and go, well, that was fun. I guess the rest of my life is just going to be one downhill spiral. What shall I do now?
Well, it's just depressing to hear someone complaining over and over again about what they once had. Yeah. You know, it's like, why don't you focus on what you can get instead of, you know, what you can't grasp in the past for again?
That's right. Mm-hmm. As Sir Mix-a-Lot said, there are some who look for opportunities to succeed. There are some who only look for reasons they failed.
He was a wise man.
He really was. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
I don't think he's dead.
I just haven't heard much from him lately. So I'm thinking maybe he's not so wise now.
Sir Mix-a-Lot? No, he's in a band with the President of the United States of America.
Is he?
Yeah, he's in a band called Subset. They're awesome, by the way. Let's take a telephone
Ooh.
Call. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. You're on the Rick Emerson radio program. Hello.
That would very much be madam. Can you hear me now?
Hello, madam. Hello, how are you on this fine Friday?
I am fine. This is Kara. I am calling from a 44-foot sailboat in St. Helens.
I don't understand. What do you mean you're calling from a sailboat in St. Helens? Is there water there?
Yes, it's a river.
What river goes through St. Helens?
The Columbia.
Oh, never mind.
Goes out to the ocean from Portland. Yeah,
that's why St. Helens smells like a combination of sauerkraut and ass all the time, because there's a paper mill there on the river.
I didn't know. Okay.
I can smell the ass in the air.
This is not a thing I was privy to. All right, what brings you to the phone today?
I'm usually at work right now, so I never get a chance to listen. I still haven't freaking heard the show much at all. So I thought I would at least call in and say hello and say I am just so, so thankful that you are back.
Well, thank you. And by the way, I should note a couple of things because we're not going to have time to do this today because I'm busy hitting the wrong sound bites and obliquely identifying our enemies. Coming up next week, one of these segments, people have asked for this, one of the segments that we are going to start rolling out next week on the show is we are going to do...
Shave Rick's chest?
No, shaving Rick's chest will happen later when I have to do something for children. Starting next week, one segment per day is we are going to address a technical issue from the program. In other words, we will tell you how to listen on a smartphone, or we will tell you how to get the show on your iPod, or we'll tell you how to get the RSS feed of Legion of News. So every day next week, we're going to set aside a segment and we're going to answer specifically one technical issue. I know a lot of people know the show is back. They've subscribed, but they haven't been able to hear it. Let me just tell you, it's been nothing but pure distilled genius.
I've gotten to listen to a little bit here and there, and what I've heard just, you know, knocks my socks off, as always.
Well,
poor Don never gets to talk. It's just like Kim is there. It's wonderful.
It's like nothing ever changed. There's this tedious nasal guy droning on, and then somebody in the background going, I prepared news for hours. Oh, God.
Right. And then when I do get a chance to read it, I mispronounce the names.
Yes.
It's just like old times.
Well, thank you.
All hail the Rick Pig, baby, and I'm looking forward to continued greatness at only $666 a month if you buy a whole year.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your support, and I mean that in a note, totally sincere, not Eddie Haskell kind of way. Thank you for supporting the show. It means a great deal.
You are so very welcome.
All right, thank you. There you go. As always, the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. So, yes, if you this is an accident, by the way. I did not plan this, but if you subscribe for a whole year, it is $666 a month, which is fantastic. I saw that posted.
That is awesome. You should totally claim that you did that on purpose.
We saw it on the Twitter. It was like, it's $666 a month. Well done, Rick. And I was like, yeah, I had no idea. It just sort of happened that way.
So I have a question.
Yes.
How are you crazy kids settling into the building?
Yeah. So did you hear what happened to us yesterday?
Okay, kind of.
How did you hear about this? How is this getting out already?
I'm going to, and I apologize, because I realize now that I hope I didn't ruin some sort of show content for you. I may have, but here's what happened.
No, we talked about it yesterday.
Yeah.
I'll actually join these two together. So I'll back up and say that you guys started Fun Employment Radio as soon as you got fired from KUFO. Mm-hmm. Court and Bobby went to PDXFM, and I just figured, you know, I was sitting around figuring, what am I going to do? Am I going to go back to radio, whatever? And finally, I just woke up, and I just thought, well, you know, I got to, what else am I going to do? This is, and by which I mean that this is, you know, this is the only thing I've ever really wanted to do for a job. And I didn't want to just out of some fit of pique, just out of some stupid pride, be like, screw them. I'm not going to go back. Because then that doesn't punish anybody who needs punishing. Mm-hmm. It punishes me and, you know, and then people who maybe want to listen to the show aren't able to and whatever. So I thought, you know, I'll do it. And so we all got together. We have a studio here together, mm-hmm. that we share, which is great, and it makes me feel really proud and old simultaneously. That like Sarah and Gregor, you guys are off doing your own show, and it was sort of like, and the child has learned to walk. And now
it totally is. You taught me everything. Yeah. I mean, just for the record, if anybody knows that Rick and I've worked together for a long time, I mean, he taught me everything that I know about radio.
So sad. Think of what you could have become.
And that's why I'm sitting in this room drinking a beer in the middle of the afternoon.
Think of what you could have achieved if you just interned with like Lars or something.
I know, it's too bad. I didn't realize that radio was going to be my secret love until I started the internship. I'm like, oh crap.
Yeah.
There goes my life.
But we are now in this, the building, as we say, high above the milk packing district here in beautiful Southeast Portland. I got this text message last night. I think it was a text or phone call or something. But
it was both.
My phone had been off during the show. We got off the air yesterday around 3 p.m. And you guys came in, you did the show. And I, as I sometimes do, forget to turn my phone back on. I check it later and there's a thing from Greg. And he's like, do you have the phone number for the office managers? This woman who kind of runs the whole building. Do you have the phone number? And I text back. I'm like, I think this might be her cell. But then I didn't really ever hear back. And so I went home and Lauren said something. My wife said something. She's like, hey, was there some problem with Greg and Sarah? Were they perhaps locked on the rooftop patio like a bad sitcom device? And I said, what do you mean locked on the roof? She said, I think they may have been imprisoned on the roof of the building yesterday. And all I heard from her was that she thought, and I don't even know where she heard it. She heard from somebody that you guys had been trapped on the roof of the building and that somebody had to throw a key down to somebody else on the street. And that's all I know.
No, so do you remember when the lovely lady who was the manager of the building gave us the tour and when she was showing us the roof and she's like, now, be careful to never shut this door.
I don't remember her saying
that. No, she said it. She's like, be careful to shut this door because there's no way back in. There's no key.
Oh, wow.
It locks from the inside. That's it. If it closes, you are stuck up.
Note to self. I had no idea.
Oh,
There's like a keypad or something though on it.
No, so we were trying. So we go out to the roof because it's a beautiful day. It was like, you know, 85 degrees yesterday. And so we're like, let's take a break from
recording. Yeah. Go up there.
Just take a few minutes, and all of a sudden, and I walk up before Greg, and then I hear Greg like kind of struggling with something, and then I hear this click. I'm like, oh God, no.
Well, and the worst part was too, because you were having trouble opening the door because it's really hard to open. So I yanked on it and opened it, and then walked around the other side, and then yanked on it and spent a good probably 3 seconds getting the thing closed. And then locked.
Yeah, and then I heard the click. I'm like, oh God, oh God. And so we're like, okay, this is kind of funny. All right, let's figure it out. And there was that keypad, so we're like hitting all the buttons, like trying to figure out what people would do. We're just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, like trying to make patterns. Couldn't figure it out. So then we finally, so thankfully we had our phones. So
yes.
Greg got the phone number to the woman's office, started calling. It was 4:32. Their office closed at 4:30. We were the only ones in the entire building.
And were you already thinking to yourself, like, well, one of us is going to have to jump, and then I'll have to land on the other one?
Well, and by the way, there's no fire escape up there.
No, of course. Why would there be?
No, there's nothing. We're just trapped up there. And
you'll
just, like,
escape into heaven if there's a fire.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
so we're there. And so finally, we're calling everyone we know, just like, would you happen to be in the neighborhood? Like trying to gauge if people walking down the street look creepy or not, or if we should throw them our key card. We're like, no, we're not
That's
going
exactly
there.
What you want to do. Sir, here's an irreplaceable key card that gives you access to this whole building.
You Jesus. Look safe.
We almost spoke to the guy with the sombrero on.
Yeah, that's right.
Until we realized he wasn't wearing it, ironically, and just kind of crazy.
Did you just call somebody eventually?
Called my wife.
Katie, who's busy studying and working and everything, had to get all of her stuff together and come down.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
We were trapped up there for a good 45 minutes.
At least.
Wow. And I mean, what was the weather? Well, at least it wasn't raining.
No, I mean, it was nice weather.
I got some sun as we were up there.
So the door doesn't open up again.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You know, the thing is, it's just as well, because, you know, that door is hard to open in the first place because it rained one time and the carpet swelled up or the boards or whatever. Okay. And so it's very hard to open and close. So I guess that's all for the good. Somebody should put a sign up there that says,
it doesn't say don't shut the door.
Okay. No.
Yeah, I think we need
I remember Donna did tell me that when she pointed out to me at one point.
Yeah,
when
I first got here. Too, yeah.
She said, you know, don't close the door.
Those are the kind of things that go in my head and out the other way.
Yeah,
I won't remember that.
I think I was busy going like, how are we ever going to afford this? You know, but
there ought to be some kind of like a stone, you know, dwarf or something, some kind of a lawn ornament or something that you could stick in front of the door. It's something large that you will see when you walk out there so that you know, oh, I must prop this open
in some
manner.
Well, wait a minute. Does the door open in?
Yeah.
Yes.
It opens in, so I don't think you would ever accidentally pull it shut behind you. You have to work at closing that
unless
door.
You're Greg.
I mean, seriously.
You really do have to work.
Unless you're a Clydesdale. I mean, you're not going to be able to just pull it. At least I can't, but I'm spindly, so, I mean, it's all very bad. All right. Well, this is the point where I'd normally throw it to Pop Culture Authority, but I'm just terrified to try that now. So let's do this. Let's talk about your listener party, which is coming up tomorrow.
Yes. Tomorrow at the Balcony Bar at the Hawthorne Theater on 39th and Hawthorne starts at 8 p.m. But
get there early.
Yeah, we're suggesting people get there early.
Yeah, because we didn't realize, because we've had a lot of people RSVP. Now it's like, of course, you remember doing listener parties.
Yes.
Like now it's like, it's the terror point. It's like 24 hours away, okay? Mm-hmm.
The what point? Oh, terror.
Terror.
What?
So we booked this venue, and you know, it has a certain capacity, and we... I'm just getting a little nervous that we might exceed the capacity, so we're wanting to tell people to get there early.
Can I ask what the capacity is? Or are you?
I don't want to say
no.
It,
write it down. No. You should write down the capacity of the venue. And then we'll... Oh, wow. Okay, well, that's a lot of people, but your guys are going to draw even slightly more than this.
Slightly more.
It'll be capacity plus a couple.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Look, I'm going to... You know, Don's going to be there. I'm going to be there.
Of course, if I can't get in because you've already reached capacity, if you don't see me... That's probably why.
No, what we're going to do, because we have the list, so we're going to make sure to put marks next to people who definitely need to be in there for something.
Yes. You're a power broker, Don. You're people who knows people. You're people are people. So
I could get my goons to...
that's right. You can get
to give them a talking to.
Your entourage.
No, so, Don Taylor, you will have no problem.
So
I'll
what
have
time
Turtle
are you,
go in ahead of me.
When are you recommending that people show up?
I would say 7.
7
o'clock? Yeah, I would say 7-ish, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is, so if people know where the Hawthorne Theater is, this is on the Hawthorne-facing side of the building.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
So there's a little fenced balcony area off to the side, and you just walk right through there. That's going to be the entrance, because there's something happening in the main part.
Yeah, it's like a metal band or something.
Death metal band or something.
Sure. All right.
But that's going to be completely sequestered off, so.
What sort of activities will be happening at the Fun Employment Listener Party, which is happening Saturday, June 26th?
Greg Nibbler.
Well, we will have karaoke. Which is one main thing that we've been wanting to have. Because we do sing a lot of karaoke on the show.
I've heard it. I was in the kitchen a couple nights ago, and I'm working on something. And here's the thing. The soundproofing, David Walker was here, and I told him it was a bit like, you know, it was a work in progress. It was like a house that was being built while we were still living in it. The soundproofing is an incomplete job at the moment. And so, was that your friend Tuggy that was on the show?
That was Tuggy, yes.
I'm in the kitchen, and so they end the show with the karaoke, and... I didn't know it was like opera day at Fun Employment, because I'm typing away and I'm like uploading the show, and then I hear Sarah singing something, but your voice is not quite as piercing as his, and so I hear you doing like, and then I hear Tuggy going, "It's me they fear," and I was like, "What the hell?" It was like Dio was suddenly in here belting out Phantom of the Opera, but it was
the loudest singing voice.
It was great. So you guys are gonna be doing karaoke. What else is going
we'll
on?
We'll have that. Well, and for people that listen to the show, we've been doing a segment called Romancing the Spammer.
Tell people what it's about.
So Romancing the Spammer.
Show you're crazy.
All right. And this is something that I did on the side and then decided to bring to the show. So I create fake email accounts
and then post them everywhere to get as many spammers as possible,
uh-huh.
and then reply back to the spammer. So I create like a character who is always very wealthy, has tons of money, but isn't quite sure how to get it to them, and correspond back and
forth. Easily.
Yeah, gets very confused, but is always seeking love. So I always find it, you know, the lonely woman. I think this one's what she's in Burkina Faso,
yes.
and she needs money really badly. So. I create this character, Chester Huntington III is who it was, and so we go back and forth.
You should say that in your voice.
Chester Huntington III.
My dearest Anita. Do you have a monocle?
Anita. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And her name is Anita Kipkalia.
My beautiful little muffin cake.
Wow.
So we've done now, I think it's up to 26 letters. It's been going for 2.5 months. I've strung this person along, never sending them money, always saying I sent it and telling them to
He's
go
proposed.
Check for it.
They're now, she now refers to him as her husband.
Yes, we're married. I revealed a very shocking physical characteristic of Chester.
Chester has 3 testicles.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
Yes. But
that would explain his great wealth and drive for success.
Yes. He's a very passionate man.
Wow.
So we've got the finale of this. It's finally come to its conclusion, and we haven't read them on the air yet, so we're going to be doing that live during the listener party.
So we'll Fantastic. Do reenactment. So I'll read, mm-hmm. I read the part of Anita. And then he reads the parts of Chester.
That is wonderful. And I can picture that guy. Except in my head, he looks like Mr. Peanut for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it's the monocle.
Kind of. Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of speculation about what Chester actually looks
like. I was thinking of the Monopoly guy.
Yeah. Yep. No, his name is Alfred J. Pennypacker. Mm. I don't know why I know that.
So. Well, and when we would have asked for pictures of Anita, it's like some poor girl that they've just like, you know, just copied and pasted from like a Sears Roebuck catalog.
And that's the thing. Every spammer I've ever corresponded with, they always send the exact same pictures. Whoever this girl is,
poor girl.
Got her like glamour shots stolen. Who this person is.
There was a great article I read in like a New York Times or something a while back where they were talking about, you know, like the guy wanted to find out like who are these people who are spamming me? Like really, who are they? And a lot of them, as you know, come from Nigeria. And he said that there are in fact internet cafes where the sole clientele is like a spamming, and they're not all working for the same company, but they're all in the same. You know, it's like if you had a bar where nothing but heroin dealers hung out.
It's like a spammer cafe?
Yeah, but what will often happen is a guy who owns the cafe, it's just understood that like all of the guys who are going to use his internet cafe are spammers, and they either pay him rent or a slice of whatever they make, and in turn, he just provides them an internet cafe basically of their own. They have the run of the joint, and where they have access to high-speed internet and whatever, and they will just sit there, and it's like they'll clock in and they'll clock out, and sometimes it's like a pyramid scheme where one guy has other spammers working underneath him.
Wow.
There is actually now a whole subgenre of hip-hop in Nigeria that is they are songs about gullible people, usually Americans, being taken in by their spam, and like how it brings glory to Nigeria and to your family that you've swindled somebody like in Portland out of, you know, $500. There's a whole thing about it. It's fascinating.
Wow. That is fascinating. I want to read more about that.
I had a thing I was going to say here, but it escaped me at the moment. We're here with Sarah X. Dillon, Greg Nibbler. Let's pay a visit to the news desk with Don Taylor, who is working on these stories for you right now.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
I believe we have a corpse watch.
All right, hold on a second. Of course, I closed the folder there in my attempt to locate the Pop Culture Authority thing, which was never, ever, ever, ever going to be found. I'm sorry. It's a... and this is all true. Glad you guys could come here on the least organized day of the week.
Seriously, you see us doing our show, too. Come on.
Yeah. All right. It's a corpse watch.
It is a corpse watch.
All right. Just talk amongst yourselves.
So, are you enjoying the weather, Don?
I am. It's been a long time since I've had beer at work, so I'm enjoying
Not
today.
Not long enough. Yay. Here's your corpse watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone, but I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone, yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
There is your corpse watch for Friday. This is Don Taylor.
A Bangladeshi court summoned friends of a dead man in an effort to end a 6-month wrangle over his corpse by his 2 wives, one of whom is Hindu, the other Muslim. When Chandan Kumar Chakrabarty, alias Sazad Hussain, 42, was stabbed to death by muggers last December, his secret double life was exposed, and his 2 wives have since fought over his body. His friends will testify about whether he converted to Islam, as his second wife claims, policeman Delwar Hussain said, adding that the friends would appear in court on on June 29th. His Muslim wife, who said she was married to him a year ago, wants Chakrabarty to be buried in line with traditional Muslim rites. His Hindu wife, who was married to him for 15 years, said the body must be cremated and accuses the second wife of being a fake. If we still can't decide, the court will then see if we need to re-examine the body and see if he'd been circumcised, Hussein said.
Wow, I didn't expect it to end that way.
Took a twist.
Circumcision is mandatory for Muslim men, but Hindu men are not required by their religion to undergo the operation.
But in the meantime, he's presumably being buried nowhere. Also, it's pretty June, much. So oh. That seems...
Well, they said they're going to have to exhume him, so perhaps he has already been buried and they're going to have to dig him back up.
This sounds like some sort of a Middle Eastern sitcom in the making where she's a Muslim, she's a Hindu, he's dead. And then, you know.
But apparently they're going to dig him back up and look at his penis. Because if he's been circumcised, then obviously he converted to Islam.
Obviously. I'm sorry. There you go.
Isn't this something that the wife would know?
That's a good question, actually. Have they asked the wives, like, what about his junk?
Yeah, but supposedly this woman is lying. The first wife says the second wife is lying.
That's true.
So she could be lying about the circumcision.
All right. I guess, yeah, one of them is obviously telling a fib about the nature of his manhood. All right. And it makes you wonder if that's the sort of thing one can tell after a year and a half. I mean, embalming is an inexact science, I would say, especially in, you know, they place a greater emphasis, I think, in Western nations on embalming and, like, preserving your body if you're dead than they do in other places.
I'm sure there are forensic penis experts.
Yeah, probably. There you go. There's your corpse watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
Oh, by the way, just because I don't want to forget about this. So somebody sent me an email and they asked if the toothpaste and shampoo that I bought at the dollar store were the same brand, because I noted that this
was it placenta shampoo.
No, it wasn't. So I was talking about this toothpaste that I got at the dollar store, because I have a whole thing about brushing my teeth, you know, before I go on the air. You know, because otherwise...
Crazy, I worked with you for years. I know.
May hard to believe. I have a series of, you might call them, rituals that I engage in. Now, I put a disproportionate amount of importance on them as well, so you'll have to indulge me. I wanted, some cheap toothbrushes here, and so I bought a three-pack of for $1. $1. I got three toothbrushes with travel cases. And then for another $1, I got this toothpaste, which is both sensitive and extreme. And it does say on the back, do not use longer than 4 weeks unless you've consulted a doctor. So I figured it's got to be like, it's got to do some like, you know, your teeth must become like hella scrubbed or something. If you, like, you know, it has lye or something in it.
A listener actually wrote in earlier and said that it can harm the nerves in your teeth because it is sensitive toothpaste stuff. Right. So it has an analgesic in it to supposedly help fight pain. And ostensibly, if you keep doing this, it soaks into your teeth and it can harm the actual nerves.
That would be good, though, because then you would have no more tooth pain. Then going to the dentist would be a pleasant experience that involved no discomfort whatsoever.
Or it could harm them in such a way that you have more tooth pain.
Oh, no. Then the tooth beaver comes every night. That's,
The tooth beaver?
What? You know Ren and Stimpy, the tooth beaver?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I haven't thought about that.
I was going to say, if you
have... It comes and gnaws on your nerve index.
Yeah, if you haven't watched that, don't, because it'll make
I remember
cringe.
That. That was so gross.
They are different brands. The shampoo actually had coal dust in it, and it said that California had banned it, and it caused cancer. But it works fantastically on your hair. But I wanted to list a couple of the other things, just so we can be done with this. Among the products offered at the dollar store, Glamour Lines Invisible Bra Strap, where it actually said, the tagline was, hide those unsightly bra straps, and it said it in like a sunburst thing, and on the front was a girl... And she was looking down to the ground, tilting her head and covering her face, like as though the shame was, as though she was going to have to go immolate herself out of despondency that her bra straps were visible. Let's see. There's a product called High on Hair. I have no idea what High on Hair is, except that it was manufactured by a company that is just called TV Brand, because now they have there is now an entire line of products whose sole distinguishing feature is that they are advertised on television. Also sold by TV product, Personal Touch Bra Clips. And I don't even know what a bra clip is.
What is a bra clip?
See, you
I had no idea.
See, I was thinking that you and Dawn would be able to tell me what these products are for. What is a bra clip? Is It was. It looked like a. It was like butterfly shaped. It was a butterfly shape. It looked like.
It might be one of those things that you clip your bra straps together in the back, so it pulls them in farther.
That's what I would think too. It was like a racing back.
Yeah, so you can wear a racing back.
It looked shirt. Like a butterfly clip from an Ace bandage, if you know what that is. Mm. You know what is it from a racing back?
Yeah, a racing back tank top. Where it cuts in.
Oh, where it curves in?
Yeah.
Oh, this is more of that don't show the... This is like the don't show the panty line thing.
Which is kind of... All of this is kind of hilarious, by the way, because if you walk around the world at all, outside in the real life, it appears that no one seems to care about their bra straps showing anymore.
No, no one cares. And you know...
I remember my mother being just obsessive about it when I was growing up, that like, it's so tacky and no one should ever see your bra strap, ever. And now it's like, girls are wearing like spaghetti straps, tank tops, and a bra under it, and you're seeing all the straps, all the... No one seems to care anymore.
Yeah, that was me yesterday, actually, yeah. My bra straps just hang out all the time, usually during the summer.
Well, see, and this is actually gonna... And Greg will back me up on this. This is a thing that men have never cared about ever. And in fact,
that's because you don't have to strap this thing to your chest every day.
No, that is true. But guys, not only do they not mind, guys, I think in my experience, actually, they like the bra strap is a turn on, especially if you're in high school. Wear like it, anything like linoleum is a turn on if you're in high school, I guess. But it doesn't matter. You've used like bra strap, panty line, all the things. This really is, it's microcosmic of the whole male-female aesthetic relationship, because all the things women try to get rid of or do to try to look you know, more attractive, it's all exactly the opposite. It's like they've got a Costanza disease where women, you know what, I'm not going to eat, and so my clavicle will poke through my skin, then he'll find me hot. Meanwhile, the guy is just going, just like a popcorn, a sandwich, an apple, anything, come on. And women are trying to hide their bra straps. Meanwhile, guys find bra straps kind of hot.
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't really matter what it is they're wearing. It just reminds you there's boobs under there.
That's the important thing. That's my thing.
Wow. Can I break in on this bra strap conversation here, Erla? Okay. We got a top five. We've been promising for like a week. We have guests here that still want to pimp their thing. We're running out of time, sir. Nice. We're running out of time.
Dawn is awesome.
Things never change, do they? And you guys have got to get in here and actually tape your show. All right. So my final then observation, I'll skip right to the end. No, this is the one I was building toward, but that's fine. I'll just go right to the part where Kaiser Soze is,
can I guess,
you know,
what it is?
Okay. Yeah, well, it was... I'll give you a hint. I stopped and was making notes to myself, my little voice recorder. And I thought I was done, and I put it away. And I'm there, and I'm buying... By the way, I'm buying a tube of toothpaste, three toothbrushes, and the family-sized box of Crunch and Munch. which, it, you know, makes it look like I've got the problem and the solution all in one trip there. But they were selling a thing at the checkout at the dollar store. While I was listening to Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now by Starship, I noticed this item. What do you suppose it was?
Was it a pregnancy test?
It was a pregnancy test! How did you know that? Get
because
out of my head.
No, because I see them every time I go to the dollar store, and I'm just like, every time I see them, I'm like, who the hell would buy a pregnancy test?
Who would trust a $1 pregnancy test?
What were they called? They have a funny name.
This was called... It implied that it was better than a competing brand. It was something like Better Result or Sure Result or something. But no, but okay, see,
Average Result.
We almost right.
Pretty clear.
We see,
quite possibly accurate brand.
The thing is, we've gone two different ways on this. You guys immediately go, understandably, to the who would buy a pregnancy test at a dollar store.
Are you thinking who wouldn't?
I went a whole different way, which is I'm looking at this thinking, all right. Now, by the cash register, these are all impulse buy items. Things that you think, you know, well, I don't know, I may need that at some point. I guess I need some Tic Tacs and probably some D-cell batteries for something. We something has D-cell battery. Okay, I'll get they're out on sale. It seems like a pregnancy test, that is a destination purchase. That's where you and your boyfriend are staring at each other going, I don't know, it's just a couple of days, but I'm usually pretty, I'm regular usually, so I just, why don't I go to the store and get a pregnancy test? I just don't, and so in other words, you go to the store, you walk to the aisle, you get that, and you go to the cash register. You don't walk into the store and go to the cash register. That is targeting people who figure, well, let's be honest, who am I fooling?
I haven't felt a little bloated lately.
In the next month or two, I'm probably going to need one. Am I right, guys? Come on.
And let's face it, women who do a lot of shopping at the dollar store probably want to stock up.
Right.
And just have them on hand.
You know, there's like one, you know, there's like two girls named Tammy and, you know, and LaShonda, and they're there and they're going, well, one of us will probably need this. So let's just pick it up. Let's get five.
God, they should have dollar store condoms next to the dollar store.
Seriously. All right. Let's do this. Let's do... let's do our Jackson watch for today. Then we'll do a final little recap with Greg and Sarah. Find out more about the listener party that's happening tomorrow for Fun Employment Radio. And then
today's the anniversary, right?
Is it? Well, let's find out, shall we?
I think it is.
It's time for your Jackson watch on Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Don Taylor with your Jackson Watch.
It is 1 year ago today that Michael Jackson, age 50, died.
Oh, boy, a year, a whole year. Wow.
And his mother, Catherine, has spoken to the press about her son and what is happening with her grandchildren these days. His daughter, Paris, who's now 12, has turned her bedroom into a shrine to her daddy, where she's surrounded by his photographs, according to Catherine Jackson. Boys Prince, a 13 and 8-year-old Blanket.
Is Blanket the kid that got dangled? Is that the dangled
kid?
Yes,
that's the dangly baby.
All right, okay.
Bravely talk about wanting to make him proud, and then lapse into silent moments when they are missing him.
This is like the weirdest story.
And maybe you just said this and I missed it, but with whom are they living? Who owns the kids?
Catherine Jackson. The kids are living with the grandmother.
Well, she's like 100, isn't she?
Yeah, that's why there was a lot of discussion at the time about whether or not she should get custody.
Is there a line of succession this? Like, where do they end up with the Secretary of Agriculture or something?
I think LaToya gets them if this doesn't work out. Then like Tito. It probably goes alphabetically.
Tito. I hope it goes to Tito first. I think everything should go to Tito Jackson next. He should be like third in line for all positions everywhere.
Catherine Jackson says they don't have any friends. They don't go to school. They have private lessons at home, but that will change in September when they are due to enroll at a private college.
What?
How is it a cop? That's what she said. Well, you know, she's old. She doesn't know she thinks they're college age.
They can't.
So they're like four, and she's like, they're going to college.
But they have their cousins and aunts and uncles around them constantly, and that's helped immensely.
Oh, I'm sure that helps them. There's nothing that helps your stability more than being surrounded by the Jackson family.
And she says, to them, it's normal. It's the life they have known.
God damn.
I don't think these kids know from normal.
No.
I cannot even begin to. I mean,
do you remember that day? You called me and told me.
I don't remember that at all.
I'm sorry,
I was going to say, let's go around the room actually and find out how everybody found out, because I remember the chain of events. Don Taylor, how did you find out about Michael Jackson's death?
I don't remember.
What?
I don't remember.
Way to disprove my theory right
now. I'm sorry, I really have no idea. I don't recall.
Do you remember the first moment where you don't remember the first moment when you went from not knowing to knowing?
No. No, I really don't. I mean, I remember that it happened at some point. I probably went, oh, holy crap, Michael Jackson died. I don't remember.
That's bizarre. It's like it's just saturated your brain to such an extent that you have no demarcation line.
I don't think Michael Jackson was really that important to me.
Oh,
I mean, I know
no.
that he's important to a lot of people, but to me, not so much. I mean, you know, if Elvis Costello suddenly died, I'd know exactly where I was when that happened. Michael Jackson, not so much.
Well, that's a fair point. He's he is like America incarnate in so many ways. I remember exactly where I was sitting at home. I found out via Facebook, actually. And it was from our good friend Seamus. He was the one who tipped me off because I saw a post and he said, because who had just died? Didn't somebody else die just days before
Farrah Fawcett?
Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
And he's like...
And then everyone forgot.
Yeah. It was like, well, it was like, you know, Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa, a great woman who been... Oh, my God, Princess Di is dead. Seamus posted a thing and he said, oh, my God, now nobody's going to care about Farrah Fawcett. It's going to be nothing but Jackson news. And I was sitting at home in my large, overstuffed green armchair and I went, hold on, what does that mean? That can't possibly... And then I went to a Drudge... Because remember, it took like CNN like 9 hours to confirm it,
mm-hmm.
I just went like, "Holy God!" And then I guess I called you.
You called me, so it was when we were doing the early morning show last year when we were employed at this time.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And I had been taking a nap, and I woke up. I think it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I woke up and I looked at my phone. I'd missed like 16 phone calls, and I was like, "What the hell is going on?" And the last person that had called was you, so I called you back, and I was delirious because I'd just woken up from my nap, and I'm like. And I'm like, Rick, what's up? Because I missed a couple of calls from you. And you're just like, dude, you haven't heard what happened? And I thought we were fired. Actually, that was the first thing. I'm like,
it's funny how circumstances, almost like a dry run for
I was kind of dire. I'm like, and you're just like, dude, Michael Jackson's dead. And then, yeah, from then on, that whole week was crazy. Like, from Finding He Was Dead all the way to that freak show of a funeral.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember watching that whole thing on TV, too.
We were talking about that yesterday.
That, yes.
And how we all had this sort of silent agreement as a society not to do, like, rim shots, you know, when Al Sharpton goes, another one strange about your daddy. You know, we all, no, that's, no, it's true. No, don't, just tell him and let him think it's true for, like, a week.
That was the most awkward moment in that thing.
Yeah.
Greg Nibbler?
Let's see. Well, I had just gotten back from the station, and I got a text from my friend that just said, Jackson's dead. And so I didn't really know what that meant. It didn't say Michael Jackson or anything like that. So I turned it on and found out from there. And then immediately after I turned on the TV, I think I got a call from you saying to, like, start getting audio together. And you didn't even say what had happened. You assumed I already knew.
Yeah.
Like, you need to get audio together for this. We got to get this stuff together for tomorrow. Like, okay.
Well, that was, man, I am proud to say that, man, I beat that story like a gong. I beat that story like a rented mule just every single day.
That and the David Carradine story.
Oh, man, that was so good.
Weeks.
You know what? One of the very first consultants I ever had, maybe the first consultant, Brian Jennings, he told me this. Rick, when you get a story that the people are really into, you want to squeeze it for every moment you can. Whore it for every single second of broadcasting time. Okay.
Speaking of which, while we are in the middle of a Jackson watch, also have another story. The Reverend June Gatlin, Michael Jackson's private spiritual advisor, has revealed that in public, in private, Michael Jackson's voice was actually pitched very deep.
Wow, that's just creepy.
Saying that his famously high-pitched voice was fake. It was an affectation he took on to sound young and boyish. His voice was not high-pitched, she said. It was deep, a real man's voice. He wanted to act like a boy. Also, he felt it was a way for the public to love him more. Reverend Gatlin, a self-proclaimed seer based in Los Angeles, claims that Michael Jackson, who died a year ago today, came to her for spiritual cleansing, which included scripture reading, meditation, and journal writing to get him to open up, be himself, and speak his normal voice. She tried to get him to be just Michael, said somebody who wrote a book about him, tried to get him to be just Michael. Still, Jackson never spoke in his normal voice with his family, staffers said.
Now, I remember during the molestation trial, because that was just a cavalcade of insanity as well. There was like that whole day that he showed up in pajamas, mm-hmm. you know, and then there was the day he didn't show up at all, and it might have been the same day.
Oh, that was like 2005 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like, nobody knows where he is, and then he showed up in like footy pajamas and like looking all drugged. Looking drugged, I say now with the endless wisdom of hindsight. Somebody during the trial said something like that, that they called him at home and they asked to speak to Michael Jackson. Says, Michael home? Because, the phone, you know, somebody answered the phone, you know, who this, you know, just, you know, looking for Michael, this is Michael, you know, and it was like this, like, insanely low, and they said that they didn't believe it was him, but they found out that in his real life, his real voice was, like, very, like, it was like this, you know, hello, which is so deeply, and I don't know why that's creepy to me, like,
it is, though,
but it shouldn't be, right, it should be the other way around, that the child's voice was, you know, but instead, like, imagine if you just saw Michael Jackson as we know him, with, like, the pale and the, you know, the white skin, and he was just, hello, people of Earth. My name is Michael Jackson. And it was that would be the unnerving thing for me.
I'm sure I probably shared this before, but one of the experiences I had working at the Renaissance Fair in Southern California, we were all employees. We're told this was the late 80s, early 90s. The employees got the word that Michael Jackson is coming today. If you see him, you know, just treat him like any other customer. Don't make a big deal. Pretend you don't recognize him. And then he showed up wearing a clown outfit. He was dressed as a circus clown.
Wow.
With the rainbow wig and the red nose and stuff. And then he had a face mask over his mouth. And he was surrounded by bodyguards. And we were supposed to just, like, act like nothing was amiss.
That's not really a dress for invisibility kind of outfit.
Yeah.
And
he came, I believe, we were actually told that he was arriving anonymously.
Well, maybe it's all... It's relative, I suppose. And you're not crazy about clowns to begin with.
No. So Michael Jackson clown is extra scary.
Wearing a face mask dressed like a clown?
Because, whoa. You know, when Michael Jackson, you know, is dressed as a clown, that's like Michael Jackson dressed as Crispin Glover, dressed as the Joker, dressed as a clown. I mean, it's like layers and layers of bad. All right. Well, let's bring the curtain down on the Jackson Watch for Friday, June 25th, 2010, on the Rick Emerson Show. Go. show. And so what I'm going to do here is just for the sake of sanity is I'm going to just trash this top five. And on Monday, we're going to start from scratch. We're going to start anew. I'm no longer going to claim to get to that. That's going to be put away somewhere. Sarah Stillen, Greg Nibbler, Fun Employment Party happening tomorrow. That is Saturday the 26th at the Hawthorne Bar. And what is the balcony called?
Well, it's actually on 39th and Hawthorne. Okay. So it we'll have our own entrance right there on the Hawthorne.
Okay. Yeah, so it's called the balcony bar, even though it's not a balcony.
It's on the first floor.
Yeah, it's on the first floor, so it's kind of next to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And you can find out all the info at funemploymentradio.com.
What is coming up on today's episode of Fun Employment Radio?
Oh, what do we have today? Well, we've got the regular ball talk. We've got some World of Crazy.
We found some insane news to talk about today. And just mostly going to babble on and on about the listener event tomorrow, probably. Yeah. About how excited we are.
Fantastic. So you can hear Fun Employment Radio. It is posted each and every weekday at funemploymentradio.com. Anything else about the show you wish to pimp or whore or promote at this very moment?
You can pick up a beer koozie at funemploymentradio.com under the store section.
Or purchase a t-shirt under the store section.
I'm using the beer koozie right now.
That's yours.
Yes.
I can keep this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
They're tall boy.
We know how to win friends and influence people. We learned a long time ago that booze really can make a friend out of anyone. All right. I'll get out of here because we got to make way for Greg and Sarah going to come on in. But so we're now at the end of our first week of broadcasting, and I don't know. We'll be back on Monday, but I will just say a couple bits of business in the meantime. Don't forget, you can hear Legion of News each and every weekday on pdx.fm from noon until 1. Every episode of Legion of News, every episode of this version of the Rick Emerson Show, as well as archived audio, including the Peter Criss interview, which just went up last night, all available at the archives. So you just check that out when you get a chance and spread the word and so forth. In the meantime, you can always email Dawn. It's dawn@rickemerson.com or rick@rickemerson.com. Don, words of wisdom as we wrap out the week.
I believe over the weekend we should post what the songs were in the mystery top five that you couldn't remember what they were, and then people can write to us and tell us what they think they might mean.
By God, that's a fantastic idea. That's really good. Why didn't I come up with that? Oh, I'm a terrible person. All right, so there you go.
So check the blog.
Yes, that'll be up. That's really an... I mean, not that I'm surprised. I'm just saying that's really an astonishing... And at the end of the week... The tail end of a long day of broadcasting. You just bring in the genius to the very close. Well done. All right. Anyway, so thank you all for being there. Fun Employment Radio is going to be in the studio next. You'll be able to check out that show at funemploymentradio.com here in just a bit. So thank you all for listening. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor. Find out more, as always, at rickemerson.com. As always, the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a grant from you. Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor. Our chief engineer is Thomas the Tech Man Gill, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Canicola. Thank you all for listening. Be safe. It is Friday, June 25th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, have a good weekend. See y'all tomorrow night at the Fun Employment Radio Party. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.